Given my experience working for Mr. Trump, I fear that if he loses the election in 2020, that there will never be a peaceful transition of power. And this is why I agreed to appear before you today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome to the fire you can't put out. My goodness. The last president. There will not be a peaceful transition of power. We'll get into that in a little bit. I do want to thank you for being here. My name is Melvin. Let's get into this. So I'm going to spend the overwhelming majority of my time today going over this Cohen hearing because I feel like it is incredibly important. And I feel like it's the first real turning point that we have seen since Trump became president. So right now, everybody is holding their breath, just waiting for the Mueller report. My God, once the Mueller report comes out, it's just gonna... Well, we don't know. We don't know exactly what's in that report. See, and we also don't know when Matt Whitaker was attorney general, what he did to stymie the Mueller investigation. And now that Barr is officially the attorney general, and he has lots of public opinions about how he doesn't see the Mueller investigation as legitimate, we don't know, A, if Mueller's going to be able to finish, and if he does finish, you know, how hampered that report is going to be by the fact that Trump's been able to put several gentlemen in there that say that this investigation shouldn't even be happening. And if it comes out now, Barr, who's now the new attorney general, he has not said that he's going to make the report public. And he might. He might make it public, and he might do so with lots and lots of redactions. So the fact that we're sort of holding our breath for the Mueller report just doesn't make a lot of sense. And I've been waiting for it. I've been waiting for it like everybody else has. But I'm less and less faithful that we're going to get exactly what we're looking for. So, back in November, Americans decided to go to the polls, and they decided to overwhelmingly vote for the Democrats. And the Democrats, they have delivered. That subpoena cannon that we talked about 15 or 20 shows ago, here comes the subpoena cannon. And this thing with Cohen going in front of the committee and saying the things that he said, this is what I have been waiting for.
Never in a million years did I imagine, when I accepted a job in 2007 to work for Donald Trump, that he would one day run for the presidency, to launch a campaign on a platform of hate and intolerance, and actively win. I regret the day I said yes to Mr. Trump. I regret all the help and support I gave him along the way. I am ashamed of my own failings and publicly accepted responsibility for them by pleading guilty in the Southern District of New York. I am ashamed of my weakness and my misplaced loyalty, of the things I did for Mr. Trump in an effort to protect and promote him. I am ashamed that I chose to take part in concealing Mr. Trump's illicit acts rather than listening to my own conscience.
The two candidates during the 2016 election that seemed to me were brought forward by the people were Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. So Donald Trump beat out, 17 other Republicans to get where he got. And I don't know if anybody remembers when Bernie Sanders announced that he was running for president, he called a press conference. He's on the front lawn or something, standing in front of a microphone, and he's got some prepared remarks. And there's maybe a dozen, definitely no more than two dozen reporters standing there, and they got their microphones out, and they got their cameras, and this is how he announced. And by the end of the primary, he damn near beat the Clinton machine. And it was stunning to really everybody. Now, I think, obviously, the Clinton machine had what they had to get what they wanted. And that's how they ended up with the nomination. Well, when Bernie Sanders made his announcement this time around, it was in front of a crowd of like 20 or 30,000 people. So he's got that old magic back. And I've long maintained since the election that, you know what, Donald Trump is simply a reflection of America. My country is full of hateful people because I don't understand how you listen to his hatred and racism, pick him, and then go, well, it's because of the economy. It's because of what he said about trade or healthcare. And now his own personal lawyer, someone who was with him the whole time, went on television to defend him. Says, hey, guys, the guy, he ran a campaign on hatred and intolerance. But he says, but he was swept up by that old magic. And he just decided to stick with him. But now he's going to prison for the things that he did for Donald Trump. And he doesn't want to do that anymore. And if he goes in front of this committee and lies, he's going to go to prison for longer. And so he finally just says it straight out. The guy's a racist.
I am ashamed because I know what Mr. Trump is. He is a racist. He is a con man. And he is a cheat.
And he goes on.
Mr. Trump is a racist. The country has seen Mr. Trump court white supremacists and bigots. You have heard him call poorer countries fishholes. His private, in private, he is even worse. He once asked me if I could name a country run by a black person that wasn't a fishhole. This was when Barack Obama was president of the United States. And while we were once driving through a struggling neighborhood in Chicago, he commented that only black people could live that way. And he told me that black people would never vote for him because they were too stupid. And yet, I continued to work for him.
You'll notice that common theme. I am ashamed and I continued to work for him. In this whole scathing opening statement, he does try at one point to paint Donald Trump as human, at least to some degree. But even when pointing out that Donald Trump is human and Donald Trump is capable of these human things, he points out that humanity is not really where his heart is.
Mr. Trump is an enigma. He is complicated, as am I. He is both good and bad, as do we all. But the bad far outweighs the good. And since taking office, he has become the worst version of himself. He is capable of behaving kindly, but he is not kind. He is capable of committing acts of generosity, but he is not generous. He is capable of being loyal, but he is fundamentally disloyal.
Then he gets into the campaign itself. So although Michael Cohen did not work on the campaign, he worked right next to the president the whole time. And as I mentioned earlier, was even willing to go on television and defend him. There's a really embarrassing clip of him trying to defend Donald Trump that was on CNN. And I've played it on this show before, but I decided not to play it again. I don't feel like it has any news value, but he was there. He was there for all of it. And Donald Trump said things to him that he definitely wasn't saying to the rest of us. And I've long maintained that Donald Trump did not want to be president, did not plan to be president. This was nothing more than a big fat marketing campaign, something to raise his brand. Because when he booked these rallies to run for president, he was fired by NBC. And he goes, well, I've got the rallies already set up. I may as well do them. And then he does them and the Klan shows up for the guy. And the Klan's got huge numbers. And by the way, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, those numbers are growing now that we've got a white supremacist as a president. Going back to my Trump and Bernie comment, it pains me to admit because of how much racism there is in this president, how much racism that he has exercised and promoted. Maybe, just maybe, it wasn't the racism that made him president. Maybe it's because he didn't speak with a politician's filter. And that's the same thing that Bernie did. And we all said that Donald Trump cannot be president. Still wake up every day and I feel like I'm in a reality show. And I'm hearing it now. Bernie Sanders can't be president. But wait a minute. He too speaks without a politician's filter. And he's not starting at zero like he did back in 2016. He's starting sort of at number one already. He's already number one until, of course, Joe Biden gets in. But I think that'll fizzle out pretty quick. And Cohen says, hey, this was supposed to be the greatest infomercial of all time.
Donald Trump is a man who ran for office to make his brand great, not to make our country great. He had no desire or intention to lead this nation, only to market himself and to build his wealth and power. Mr. Trump would often say, this campaign was going to be the greatest infomercial in political history. He never expected to win the primary. He never expected to win the general election. The campaign, for him, was always a marketing opportunity.
If you watch the opening scene in Fahrenheit 11/9, you'll see the empty victory parties. You know, you'll see that really nobody showed up, and it was a very somber attitude. And of course, at all the Hillary parties, they were, you know, they were very, very happy. They're jubilant. They were so damn sure that this was going to happen for her. And then when he wins, you watch a very sad, sad man come out on stage and, oh my God, he did not expect to win the presidency. This isn't what was supposed to happen. He didn't even have a victory speech prepared. It hit me at that moment that he was not supposed to become president. Now, I didn't watch it, obviously, as it happened. I went to bed when it became pretty clear who was going to win. Like, I think a lot of people didn't. I didn't get up the next day and watch the damn victory parties. I didn't realize this until I watched the Fahrenheit 11/9 movie. I watch it 1 week, and if you watch just the first couple of minutes, I mean, all the information is there. He gives you so much information, and the whole movie's good. But just the first 5 minutes, you just blow your damn mind. And I watched that, and then this week, Cohen says, yeah, he wasn't supposed to win. Oopsie poopsie. He never intended to win. And then it hits you. Yeah, wow. It was all a big effing joke. It's like a big freaking fake TV show. Like a reality show. And then you watch the way he's been governing. He goes, man, now that he's there, he's got to fake the whole damn thing. He's got to fake that he knows what he's doing with North Korea and with other foreign policy. He's got to fake that he knows what he's doing with the economy, which he doesn't. And all the while, him, all the people around him, just trying to convince us that he is such a brilliant man.
When I say con man, I'm talking about a man who declares himself brilliant, but directed me to threaten his high school, his colleges, and the college board to never release his grades or SAT scores. As I mentioned, I'm giving the committee today copies of a letter I sent at Mr. Trump's direction, threatening these schools with civil and criminal actions if Mr. Trump's grades or SAT scores were ever disclosed without his permission. The irony wasn't lost on me at the time that Mr. Trump, in 2011, had strongly criticized President Obama for not releasing his grades. Mr. Trump declared, let him show his records, after calling President Obama a terrible student.
The committee then decided later on in the hearing that they would very much like to know how many times did he threaten somebody for Mr. Trump. And Mr. Cohen really, really tried to put a number on that.
How many times did Mr. Trump ask you to threaten an individual or entity on his behalf?
Quite a few times.
50 times?
More.
100 times?
More.
200 times?
More.
500 times?
Probably. Over the 10 years?
Over the 10 years, he asked you...
And when you say threaten, I'm talking with litigation or... an argument with
intimidation,
a nasty reporter that is writing an article.
Every time she threw out a number, more, 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 more. Then MAGA, Make America Great Again, right? These red hats with that white lettering, MAGA, which are really, and I don't care what anyone says, those are the new Klan hoods, okay? There's no way with him being this damn racist, you get to pretend like you don't know that anymore. Okay? These are the new Klan hoods. And initially, it sounded like a very innocuous phrase, make America great. What's wrong with that? Make America great again. One, you're saying America used to be great, then it got not great. Let us make it great again. So you're saying America is not great. It's funny how he gets away with that. I mean, any criticism of the country from progressives, and my God, why do you hate our country so much? But he had this idea, was, we're going to drain the friggin' swamp. We're going to drain the swamp. Okay, well, let's do that then. Let's go ahead and drain the swamp, right? And then he brought in all these damn swamp creatures. Well, maybe he's going to put some more creatures in, then he's going to drain the damn swamp. But that was never really the plan. It's a fabulous slogan, but it was never ever the plan. See, much like the wall was really just a monolithic symbol of racism for him. A statue for him, built in his time because of him. Because in his own mind, he's that great. He said he was going to replace Obamacare with something cheaper that would cover everybody. He's not even come close. He's done the exact opposite. Going to create jobs, cut taxes and create jobs. He did one of those things, but not the other. Guess which one? He also said he was going to take care of trade, take care of our trade deficit. We are in a trade war with China right now that is so crippling to America's farmers. They are begging the Trump administration for help. I don't know why they're begging him. He doesn't care. And the newest report came out. The trade deficit is growing faster than it ever has before. We are adding 12% every month to the trade deficit. What effing gives? And that was America was never great to him. He never saw America as great. It was just a slogan, part of the infomercial, and then you bought the timeshare. And now you're going to have a real hard time getting rid of it.
The sad fact is that I never heard Mr. Trump say anything in private that led me to believe he loved our nation or wanted to make it better. In fact, he did the opposite. When telling me in 2008 or 2009 that he was cutting employees' salaries in half, including mine, he showed me what he claimed was a $10 million IRS tax refund. And he said that he could not believe how stupid the government was for giving someone like him that much money back.
When I first met my dad at age 15, he talked with me about the military. He said, John, you should, John's my legal birthday. And my dad's name is John. He goes, John, you should go into the military. He goes, they give you a skill. You know, they'll teach you this. They'll teach you that. They'll pay for you to go to college. And I said, no. I wasn't real hot on the military. I was a fairly good news consumer, but I mean, not a super duper. And I started watching news because of a current events class in high school. I just didn't like what I was hearing, not just about, you know, our military, the budget and the things, some of the things happening around the world and things happening with other militaries. And I just, it never sat right with me. The whole idea of a military. And as I got to learn about history and all the rest, I didn't have as much of a disdain for the military as I did for a standing army in peacetime. Militaries make sense to me. The citizen soldier. Everybody gets trained. Everybody defends the country. That makes sense. The guns are in an armory. You know, and if we have to take up arms, and then all the citizen soldiers take up arms. But the standing army. I remember hearing somebody say, if you have a standing army, you know, it's like having a hammer. Every single problem looks like a nail. And that's effectively what we've done. And I said to my dad, no, I don't. I was also pretty feminine, real feminine. And I also saw the military as macho. I said, no, Dad, I don't think I'm going to go into the military. And he goes, well, you're going to have to sign up for selective service, which is the draft. And I said, well, I don't know. I don't really want to do that either, because I don't ever want to go in the military. And he goes, oh. Just the disdain just dripping in his voice. Ugh. Really? What are you gonna do? You're gonna go to Canada? You know what we call those people? Draft dodgers. Draft dodgers. Wow. That's a new word for me. Draft dodger. And I said, yeah, I'll dodge the draft. And it just made him sick. Never forget the sound in his voice and the look on his face. I look back now because I've done fine without going in the military. And certain points in my life, I kind of wish I had gone in the military, because I, I don't have a problem with it. I just have a problem with standing armies. So here we go. The world's most patriotic president. All of these patriots stood up and they voted for him. And we get to Vietnam. There are still a lot of right-wingers who will defend Vietnam. Yes, we went there to fight communism, and yes, they still have communism, even though we lost 58,000 people in Vietnam. But they'll still stand up for the fact that we went to Vietnam because we had to fight communism. Never mind that communism is still there. And it's stunning to me that all of these patriotic people voted for a freaking draft dodger.
During the campaign, Mr. Trump said that he did not consider Vietnam veteran and prisoner of war, Senator John McCain, to be a hero because he likes people who weren't captured. At the same time, Mr. Trump tasked me to handle the negative press surrounding his medical deferment from the Vietnam draft. Mr. Trump claimed it was because of a bone spur. But when I asked for medical records, he gave me none and said that there was no surgery. He told me not to answer the specific questions by reporters, but rather offer simply the fact that he received a medical deferment. He finished the conversation with the following comment. You think I'm stupid? I'm not going to Vietnam. And I find it ironic, Mr. President, that you are in Vietnam right now. And yet, I continue to work for him.
And of course, at that point, Trump is in Vietnam with Chairman Kim failing. And failing hard. So it went like this. A Democrat gets to ask him questions. This is Cohen, asking Cohen. And then a Republican. And then a Democrat and a Republican. And it goes on like that. I listened to all 5 hours of this. Some of these clips you've probably heard on the news already. Most of them I can't imagine you have. I consume a lot of news. And I listened to the whole thing and grabbed only the clips that I found to be relevant. And I pulled just over a dozen of them. And one of the moments for me that was absolutely striking was the Republicans knew. The Republicans that were going to be on the committee knew that the charge of racism was going to come up. And so one of those Republicans decided to find a black woman, one black woman that works for the Trump organization, bring her in the room and parade her out like it's a slave auction. He brings her out. Her name is Lynn Patton. And he says, Lynn Patton works for the Trump administration, and she does not think that her boss is racist, and she would not work for him if he were a racist.
I'm responsible for Lynn Patton joining the Trump organization and the job that she currently holds.
You made some very demeaning comments about the president that Ms. Patton doesn't agree with. In fact, it has to do with your claim of racism. She says that as a daughter of a man born in Birmingham, Alabama, that there is no way that she would work for an individual who was racist. How do you reconcile the two of those, Mr.
As neither should I, as the son of a Holocaust survivor.
I've talked to the president over 300 times. I've not heard one time a racist comment out of his mouth in private. So how do you reconcile that? Do you have proof of those conversations?
I would ask you to
Do you have tape recordings of those conversations?
No, sir. Ask Ms. Patton how many people who are black are executives at the Trump organization. And the answer
Cohen,
is
Mr.
zero.
Cohen.
So that Republican that you hear there expressing fake outrage about how he's talked to the president 300 times and heard nothing racist. After this exchange came out, there was an article printed about him, and it pointed out that back when Barack Obama was president, how he said that Barack Obama should go back to Kenya. So it seems to me that this particular Republican may not be all that great at spotting racism, because he probably doesn't think that was racist either. And so they do this. They go, well, this one black person likes the president, so therefore whatever all the other black people say does not matter. I saw a social media post where there was a discussion going on about how, like I said a little bit ago, the MAGA hat is the new Klan hood. And the conservatives would get on there and they'd share a picture of an African-American wearing the MAGA hat and go, see, he's wearing it, not racist. That's not the way it works, because you found one person that agrees with you. It does not dismiss the other 99% that do not. 98% of scientists say that global warming is real. It's happening. It's man-made. It's going on now. So Republicans find the 2% and go, no, it's not. See, because we found 2%. Shove off. So there was one African-American that stood up and said, I'm sorry, but this whole Lynn Patton thing with you trotting her out here, I don't care for that at all.
I just want to put on the record as being a Black American and having endured the public comments of racism from the sitting president, as being a Black person, I can only imagine what's being said in private. And to prop up one member of our entire race of Black people and say that that nullifies that is totally insulting. And in this environment of expecting a president to be inclusive, and to look at his administration speaks volume.
A freaking man. So every time a Democrat stood up came up with their turn with Cohen, they asked him a question. Everybody got 5 minutes. The Democrats asked a question, lots of questions, every time it was their turn. The Republicans, every time it was their turn, they asked for this meeting to be shut down. This should not be happening. This is all fake news. Everyone at home, turn off your televisions. None of this is real. This is not happening right now. Cohen, you're a liar. You got convicted of lying. Oh my God. That was all they did the whole time. I initially cut about 5 or 6 clips of them, but they're just running off of the same damn script. So I decided to just go ahead and pull the one and let you hear it. When Carol Miller got her time, Carol Miller from the 3rd District of West Virginia, she decided to spend her time not asking the guy questions, but instead doing this.
I am very disappointed to have you in front of this committee today. Quite frankly, this isn't the reason the people of West Virginia sent me to Congress. I find this hearing not in the best interest of the American people. This is another political game with the sole purpose of discrediting the president. If it was not already obvious, there are members here with a singular goal in Congress, to impeach President Trump. To achieve this goal, they will waste not only precious taxpayer dollars, but also time in this committee and Congress as a whole. In fact, they will go so far as to bring a convicted felon in front of our committee. We are supposed to take what you say, Mr. Cohen, at this time about President Trump as the truth. But you're about to go to prison for lying. How can we believe anything you say? The answer is we can't. This begs the question, why are those in the majority holding this hearing? I am appalled. We could be focused on actual issues that are facing America, like border security, neonatal abstinence syndrome, or improving our nation's crumbling infrastructure. Instead, the Democrats are trying to grasp at straws.
She's a House member, and the Republicans had the White House, the House of Representatives, and the Senate for 2 full years. And she's really worried about those things. They could have brought those things up at that time, but they didn't. And you know what else they didn't bring up? Any of the president's crimes. Cohen sympathized because he just got hammered on by these Republicans. He sympathized. He saw himself in these Republicans and finally decided to say, hey, guys, I was once where you are right now. And I got to tell you, it doesn't end well for you.
And demonstrate.
I did the same thing that you're doing now for 10 years. I protected Mr. Trump for 10 years. I can only warn people, the more people that follow Mr. Trump, as I did blindly, are going to suffer the same consequences that I'm suffering.
One of the Democrats on the panel found that statement particularly striking. And you'd think one of the Republicans would ask about it, but they weren't really there to ask questions. They were just there to shout at him, point at him, call him a liar, and just dismiss that everything that he said. And they said, hey, this is all lies. Remember, he can't lie, because if he lies, under oath, he can go to prison for much, much longer. But facts be damned. So Cohen was pressed on this. I'm sorry, did you just say, did you just sympathize with them and say, hey, I was once where you are. You might want to stop defending this guy.
Let me just finish with earlier today, you directed a comment to my colleagues, and I'm quoting, so I, correct me if I got this wrong. You said the more people who follow Mr. Trump, the more people will be where I am. Is it your expectation that people in the administration will end up where you are?
Sadly, if they follow blindly like I have, I think the answer is yes.
And so these Republicans standing up and just shouting the guy down and not asking a single solitary question. One Democrat stands up and says, don't worry about it, Mr. Cohen. They're not pissed at you because they think you're lying. They don't really mind lying. Remember, Trump, President Trump's told over 9,000 lies and he's approaching 10,000 lies now. They're not really pissed because they think you're lying. They're mad at you because you're not lying anymore.
Mr. Cohen, thank you for your composure today. Our colleagues are not upset because you lied to Congress for the president. They're upset because you stopped lying to Congress for the president.
Cohen often referred to this as redemption, a chance for redemption, a moment of just trying to redeem himself so he can get back to where he once was. And he talked about this moment of conscience that he had. He didn't act on it, obviously, but he had to tell the first lady a flat out effing lie. And you can just hear it in his voice, how upset he was, and told the lie anyway.
Not only did I lie to the American people, I lied to the first lady when the president called me and I was sitting in a car with a friend of mine. And he had me speak to her and explain to the first lady. So the answer is there. You're not accurate. And I don't feel good about any of this. And this was not my intention.
And so just to put a neat little bow on the body of his testimony, he pointed out and he said in no uncertain terms, Donald Trump did not want to be president. He did not want to make America great again. He did not do this for you farmers in middle America. He did not do this to save the babies who might be aborted. He ran for president for one reason and one reason only, to get rich.
So to be clear, Mr. Trump knew of and directed the Trump-Moscow negotiations throughout the campaign and lied about it. He lied about it because he never expected to win. He also lied about it because he stood to make hundreds of millions of dollars on the Moscow real estate project.
So there was a poll that came out immediately afterward, and I doubt that they got, and it was printed in The Hill, and I doubt that they, I don't know where the poll came from, but it said only 37% of people found Cohen credible. And I go, what in the bloody hell? I said, you know what? There'll be a lot of other polls about this. I don't know where the hell that one came from. And we have. We've had any number of polls that have come out since then. And here's where they're all at. The overwhelming majority of people believe that Cohen was truthful in his testimony. Right? About 55, 60%. And about 30, 35% believe Trump. You're going to notice a trend here. Over 60% of people believe that the president committed a crime while running for president. About 45, 50% believe that he committed a crime while he was president. They find Cohen far more credible than the president. So the numbers are all on Cohen's side. Cohen has to tell the truth. If he does not tell the truth, then he goes to prison for longer. And just to make everything that he said credible, he brought in documents, he brought in signed checks. He said that he would turn over any tape recordings that he had. And yes, the committee asked for those. And yet, there's this number out there, 30-35%, that do not believe him and still side with the president. It's amazing. And just to make it, just, you know, to be honest, to be fair, he was asked about Russian collusion. He said, you know what? I didn't see it. I don't have any direct evidence of it. So I can't say one way or the other. I won't wade into those waters. And the way the president interpreted that was, see, no collusion, no collusion. He said no collusion. No, he didn't. But because he didn't have evidence of it, he decided not to assert it. That's not the same as exonerating you. And so the White House took that one statement and go, everything else was a lie, except for this one thing that we want to believe. So let's go over the crimes that were committed by the president, shall we?
Here are the crimes for which evidence was presented today. First, bank fraud. Documents propounded by the Trump Organization to Deutsche Bank to help Donald Trump buy the Buffalo Bills, according to Michael Cohen, contained fraudulent false information. Second, campaign finance violations. The checks to reimburse Michael Cohen to pay the hush money to the adult film actress. Third, false ethics pledges, false ethics filings. Fifth, false charitable activities and fraudulent financial activities with the Trump charity. And then two things related to Russia. One is that he knew that Roger Stone had called Trump and said, we know about the hacked emails being dumped in advance.
He was in the room.
He was in the room.
Heard it on a speakerphone, he said.
That's right. And second, that he had strong suspicions that Donald Trump knew about the Trump Tower meeting in June 2016, approved it, and that he would not have allowed Donald Jr. to do anything without Donald Trump Sr.'s permission.
During the testimony, Cohen also said that Donald Trump believes that his son, Don Jr., has the worst judgment in the world. Ugh. So Trump was over doing his thing, holding hands and playing kissy face with Kim Jong-un. And of course, he failed right away because he knows nothing about making deals and even less about diplomacy. And when he came back, he said, the reason that it failed and it failed so fast was because of the Democrats. It's their fault. Of course, it's their fault because they decided to set up a meeting with a dictator. They decided to stop putting sanctions on him, allowed him to keep making weapons. They decided to give him everything that he wanted, pull our troops out of South Korea. The Democrats did all of that. The Democrats are now the president. You're not the president anymore. Now, wait. And it had to be stunning. The headlines, so many newspapers that I opened the next day on sometimes on the same page, sometimes on separate pages. On one page, it would show Cohen saying the president is a con man and a racist and a liar and on and on and on. And then on the next page or on the other half of that page, it would point out how he failed in North Korea. That had to be just crushing for him if, of course, he believed in reality, which he doesn't. And then comes Cohen's closing statement.
I've acknowledged I have made my own mistakes and I have owned up to them publicly and under oath. But silence and complicity in the face of the daily destruction of our basic norms and civility to one another will not be one of them. I did things and I acted improperly at times at Mr. Trump's behest. I blindly followed his demands. My loyalty to Mr. Trump has cost me everything. My family's happiness, friendships, my law license, my company, my livelihood, my honor, my reputation, and soon my freedom. And I will not sit back, say nothing, and allow him to do the same to the country. Indeed, given my experience working for Mr. Trump, I fear that if he loses the election in 2020, that there will never be a peaceful transition of power. And this is why I agreed to appear before you today. In closing, I'd like to say directly to the president, we honor our veterans even in the rain. You tell the truth even when it doesn't aggrandize you. You respect the law and our incredible law enforcement agents. You don't villainize them. You don't disparage generals, Gold Star families, prisoners of war, and other heroes who had the courage to fight for this country. You don't attack the media and those who question what you don't like or what you don't want them to say. And you take responsibility for your own dirty deeds. You don't use your power of your bully pulpit to destroy the credibility of those who speak out against you. You don't separate families from one another or demonize those looking to America for a better life. You don't vilify people based on the God they pray to, and you don't cuddle up to our adversaries at the expense of our allies. And finally, you don't shut down the government before Christmas and New Year's just to simply appease your base. This behavior is churlish. It denigrates the office of the president, and it's simply un-American. And it's not you. So to those who support the president and his rhetoric, as I once did, I pray the country doesn't make the same mistakes that I have made or pay the heavy price that my family and I are paying.
He's warning you. If you support this man, he's warning everybody. He lost his law license, and although it did not get covered anywhere, that part where he says he will not peacefully transfer power. There's a headline that came out in CNN just a few hours before I hit this microphone. I didn't get a chance to read the story because I went, crap, I got to go record. But the headline said this: Donald Trump is already trying to delegitimize the 2020 campaign. And of course, the Democrats have already begun their circular firing squad, absolutely determined to lose another election to this man. I want everyone to just step back for a moment and take a look at what has transpired since we decided to take our eyes off the larger picture, since we decided to stop talking about and acting on the things that really matter, since we have started looking at one another as enemies and not countrymen. Donald Trump does not care about you or me or any of us. Neither does the Republican Party. And neither does a fair amount, unfortunately, of the Democratic Party. But the Democratic Party is becoming far more Democratic. They are beginning to oust the conservative Democrats from the party. And it's not about moving too damn far to the left. It's about getting the damn money out of politics. Because here's why you don't get the things that you want out of your government. Medicare for all. Overwhelming majority of people want it, both Democrats and Republicans. But we don't have it. Why? Money. A strong social safety net. Once again, overwhelming numbers. Why don't we have it? Because of money in politics. Nobody wants the freaking wall. But here we are, fighting for the damn wall. Why? Well, they just need to keep the right-wing base in line. And it goes on from there. All of the things, tuition-free college, the overwhelming majority of people, Democrats and Republicans, we're all affected by these things. We all want these things. Why don't we get these things? Money. Money in politics. And the Democratic Party is finally changing. Ousting those corporate Democrats. And 10% of the Democrats in the House now, 10% are no longer taking corporate money. That's huge. That number used to be teensy-weensy, and now it's up to 10%. You say, Melvin, that's not much. You know, that's not just the Democratic Party. That's 10% of the whole House. And that number is just going to keep on growing because a lot of folks are finally able to start seeing through this. We haven't lost our democracy, nor have we lost our way. And we need to not act like we have. And in the closing, after this stunning day of testimony, and I listened to all 5-6 hours, whatever it was, every freaking minute of it, Elijah Cummings decides to close out by saying, hey, this is not us. It's not who we are. It's not how we operate. Let's get back to the way things were.
I know it's got to be painful being called a rat. I live in the inner city of Baltimore, all right? And when you call somebody a rat, That's one of the worst things you can call them, because when they go to prison, that means a snitch. I'm just saying. And so the president called you a rat. We're better than that. We really are. I know that this has been hard. I know that you face a lot. I know that you are worried about your family. But this is a part of your destiny. And we have got to get back to normal. With that, this meeting is adjourned.
We do not call someone a rat just for saying things about us that are not true. We call them a rat for pointing out the crimes that we have committed. The fact that the president calls him a rat should tell you everything you need to know. Unless, of course, you support him, and then, of course, down is up and the sky is in the ground. I pointed out earlier that we may not get much from the Mueller report. And if we do, we don't know how far and wide the president's pardons can go. If they can go to him or the people that, you know, Roger Stone or... But in the Southern District of New York, where they are also looking at these crimes, the stuff that's coming out of SDNY, for that stuff, the president can't pardon anybody, up to and including himself. And with all the things that Cohen said during this hearing, one of the more stunning things that he pointed out is that he is in constant contact with SDNY.
You've been in contact with the Southern District of New York. Is that true?
I am in constant contact with the Southern District of New York regarding ongoing investigations.
When was the last communication with President Trump or someone acting on his behalf?
I don't have the specific date, but it was a while ago.
And what did he or his agent communicate to you?
Unfortunately, this topic is actually something that's being investigated right now by the Southern District of New York, and I've been asked by them not to discuss it.
Is there any other wrongdoing or illegal act that you are aware of regarding Donald Trump that we haven't yet discussed today?
Yes, and again, those are part of the investigation that's currently being looked at by the Southern District of New York.
Initially, it was supposed to go one closed-door meeting, one open-door meeting, which is the clips I'm playing here, and another closed-door meeting, so three meetings total. But after that last meeting, they decided to have a fourth meeting with him the following week. So he went before them four times with that much damn information. So Fox News. We learned this week that Fox News helped kill the Stormy Daniels story. One of their editors found the story and brought it to her superiors and said, hey, Donald Trump paid off a porn star. We should run with this. And that higher up said to this Fox editor, said, sorry, but Rupert, meaning the owner of Fox News, wants Donald Trump to win. So we're not going to run that story. He says, great find. That's a great find. But we're not going to run it because he wants Trump to win. And these are things that we already knew about Fox News, that they're working directly with the president to give him everything that he wants. And immediately, Trump goes on to Hannity's show and says, no, he's a lawyer. He's supposed to know better. I don't know why he did those bad things. And of course, Hannity does what Hannity does.
He said to me at least a dozen times that he made the decision on the payments and he didn't tell you.
Yeah.
Told me,
yeah.
Personally.
Well, he did, and he made the decision. And remember this, he's an attorney. Whatever decision he makes, you're supposed to rely on an attorney to make a decision.
I didn't direct my lawyer to do it. He did it without my know-how. And so that's the defense that Donald Trump is trying for. So after all this, Donald Trump has to go to CPAC. CPAC, that's the conservative political action Ku Klux Klan, KKK. Okay. So he goes out there and gives a screaming 2-hour rambling speech about all the things that he hates. And I was going to pull a bunch of clips from it. And I said, you know what? I think SNL's got this one.
Trump spoke at the CPAC conference for, I'm not exaggerating, 2 hours and 20 minutes straight. And it started with Trump coming out and hugging the American flag like Lenny from Of Mice and Men. The hell easier from there. Here's the taste.
Our country's in big trouble, folks, because we have to get it back. Darling, is the wind blowing today? I'd like to watch television, darling. The attorney general says I'm going to recuse myself. And I'm in the White House and I was lonely. I said, let's go to Iraq. So I met generals I didn't know. General 1, General 2, General 3. I said, what's your name? Sir, my name is Raisin. What the hell kind of a name? I said, Raisin, like the fruit? $7 trillion and we have to fly in with no lights. Please get us the emails. Please. I'm going to regret this speech.
At least he's self-aware.
So Chris Christie was on Morning Joe recently, and Chris Christie wanted to – he was there for another reason, but he decided to complain about the – just briefly, how little coverage that he got during the 2016 election, right, which Joe and me could take all kinds of offense to, and fine, let him relive that fight all he wants. We all seem to be reliving that fight, but he says something. He has this delicious moment of truth where he goes – you guys made this guy. And that was another thing that I saw in the recent the Michael Moore movie, Fahrenheit 11/9, was he goes, he played these people. He said all these crazy things, and he got them to follow him around and watch his every move and report on all of his tweets. And he at times, he would just mess with them, and he would get them to watch an empty microphone for 15, 20, 30, 45 minutes at an empty microphone. And they said, and he points out, he goes, hey, guys, just a heads up, you made this guy.
It's a whole different world. He's changed that world. And by the way,
yes, he has.
Shows like this and other media outlets all through 2015, to be honest, helped to create him, because the amount of time he got on the air here and every place else gave him even more oxygen. And it was very frustrating, I can tell you, and Casey knows this because I complained to her, that we never got the time that Donald Trump did. They helped to create him.
Oh, no, don't tell people what's really going on there, Chris Christie. It's hard to tell where this is going to end up. We're on this mad roller coaster ride right now. It's hard to tell if he'll be brought down by Mueller or SDNY or these Democratic investigations, or if he's brought down at all, if he simply makes it to 2020 and actually loses and decides not to give up the presidency, or does decide to give up the presidency, or, as he's toyed with in the past, canceling the election, which, by the way, the Republicans have said they're okay with. We don't know, unfortunately, which way this is going to go. And I'm not entirely certain that I'll be still on these airwaves when that time comes. But while I'm here, I will continue to follow this stuff and continue to fill you in on it and say, hey, relax. Let not your heart be troubled. Joe Biden said something recently to a bunch of freaked out Democrats. And I don't really want Biden to be president. I don't dislike Biden. I kind of like Uncle Joe. But I've got other people I'd much rather have for president. But he said, hey, take it easy. This is not us. And we know that this is not us. And this too, hey. This too shall pass.
The America I see values basic human decency, not snatching children from their parents or turning our back on refugees at our border. Americans know that's not right. The American people understand, please, because it makes us embarrassing. The American people know overwhelmingly that that's not right. That's not who we are. I promise you. I promise you. As my mother would say, this too shall pass. We will be back.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with you, our listeners. So thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity and racism in favor of prosperity and inclusiveness. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.